the ice goes Rodriguez. Juarez feeds it off for Luckett. A turnaround shot. Kicks in. Taves shoots. He scores! Taves rips it past Drew Bauer.
Boo! Boo! Oh, man. The Kraken. Dude, they were up 2-0 at the end of the first period. I'm like, all right, man, here's the opportunity. And the Avs come right back like a defending champion does. They score 2 in the second period, tie it at 2. That was the game winner last night as the Avs beat the Kraken, my beloved Kraken, no longer undefeated in playoff history. I thought they would never lose a playoff game. That was how confident I was. Actually, I wasn't. I said yesterday I wasn't confident in game 2. I felt pretty good at 2-0 last night in the first period. But anyway, Avs cracking. They're tied 1-1, and now Seattle will host their first ever home playoff game tomorrow night in Seattle. I would love to be there, but nobody has stepped up to the plate to donate their private plane for me to use so I could go there. So I'm very disappointed in our listeners. Extremely disappointed. You've let me down. I hope that makes you feel good. But it's not about me. It's about the Kraken and me. So, that was one of the games last night in the NHL playoffs. Golden Knights tie their series. Las Vegas with the Jets. Winnipeg at 1-1. 5-2 win in Vegas. Maple Leafs tied their first-round series with the Lightning, picking up a 7-2 win in Game 2 in Toronto. The Rangers notch another road win, beating the Devils 5-1. The Rangers are up 2-0 in that best-of-seven series, and they're the lower seed against the Devils. Tonight, Game 3 is in the Stanley Cup playoffs. In the East, it's the Hurricanes, who lead the Islanders 2-0. Game 3, 6 o'clock on TBS, 6:30 on TNT. The Bruins and the Panthers tied at 1. Heading into Game 3, the Bruins number one seed, the Panthers the bottom seed. In the West, the Wild and Stars are tied 1-1. That puck will drop at 8:30 on TBS, and the Oilers and Kings are knotted 1-1. Game 3 of that series starting at 9 o'clock tonight on TNT. Coming up on the ticket, we'll talk about the Chiefs, what their plans might be, and the crazy rumors swirling around the Chiefs as to who they're going to draft in the first round next Thursday when they Chiefs and Kansas City host the NFL draft, a 3-day event. And also there's some news about Patrick Mahomes not being the highest paid quarterback in the National Football League. We were talking about that the other day. Perhaps that will change in the near future. And also the Royals are back in action tonight. I'll tell you a guy they need to go get to help their pitching staff that's available right now. He's a name that Royals fans love. And the Oakland A's announcing that they're moving to Las Vegas. Former Iowa State Cyclone has found a new home when it comes to college basketball. And the NBA playoffs last night, a 76er gets ejected, but I would argue it was the wrong one. That's all coming up. Plus, Nick Lynn will join us. He is going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame for the class of 2023 by the Kansas Volleyball Association. We will hear from Coach Lynn coming up in just a little bit. But first, we throw it to Dusty, local sports from yesterday.
Yeah, we do have a softball story. As boy, senior pitcher Chloe Odell reached the 300 strikeout mark last Thursday in the Trojans' 15-0 and 19-0 doubleheader sweep of Sacred Heart in Salina. And she was honored yesterday at the games against Southeast of Salina, recognized for achievement. She's been at the top of her game to start 2023. Just 3 earned runs that she's given up, struck out 78 batters with an ERA of 0.54 over her career. In addition to her 300-plus strikeouts, Odell has 15 shutouts, 7 no-hitters, 2 perfect games, and she's helped bullet to a 12-2 record so far here in 2023 and helped them to a 1-0 win in the first game yesterday against Southeast of Saline as they went all 7, but in the bottom of the 7th inning, Haley Channel got a game-winning RBI to get that victory for Beloit. Game 2 didn't go quite as well for the Lady Trojans of Beloit yesterday. Southeast getting the win. They jumped out 12-0, ended up winning it 12-2 in 5 innings. So after yesterday's games, both teams are now 12-2 overall. Beloit is 7-1 in the NCAA, while Southeast Saline is now 5-1 in the league. So let's look at what happened as far as Beloit softball yesterday. Also on Thursday in softball, Sylvan Lucas picked up a sweep over Republic County, winning 19-9 and 16-3 to move to 6-6 on the season. Also, baseball yesterday, a tough day for Beloit there against Southeast, as Southeast won the first game 19-0 in 4 innings, took the second game 12-0 in 5. Southeast now 9-5, 5-1 in the NCAA. Beloit dropped to 6-8 and 3-3 in league play. Concordia moved to 7-5 with a win and a loss there at the NCKL Mid-East League games there in St. Mary's. Silver Lake won the first game over Concordia 11-7. Concordia beat St. Mary's 15-5 in game 2. And the Sylvan Lucas Lincoln baseball team getting a sweep over Kinsley 14-5 and 17-4, as the Mustangs are now 8-6 in baseball here this season. Also yesterday, Beloit Golf Invitational as Concordia took first place as a team. Osborne was second, Sacred Heart third. Individually, Carson Lister from Concordia won the gold medal, 85 on the day. Tarek Kelser, Smith Center, tied for third place with an 86. And Dawson Lance of Osborne finished in 10th place yesterday. You can find the full results for the Beloit Golf Invitational at nckssports.com. So that's a look at what happened in yesterday's high school sporting events.
Yeah, pretty impressive, some of those numbers Chloe Odell put up there.
Yes.
Also pretty impressive, Southeast Saline baseball team hitting 6 home runs and outscoring Beloit 31-0 in a doubleheader. You say, I don't know how you worded it, but you're very, very polite. I would have said a very long day for the Beloit baseball
team. I said it was a rough
day. Actually, it was
a
shorter day, not a long day, because they got done in shorter amount of innings because of run rules, but not able to score a run. Yeah,
not a lot of times you'll go and baseball's over before softball.
Hardly ever. Yeah, we were done before. Baseball was done before softball last night, which I'm not complaining about that part. Getting home a little bit earlier, and it was getting colder. At the same time, you don't want to go home early because your team gets blitzed twice, but that's what happened.
My cousin plays.
Southeast is a pretty good team, even though the record doesn't show that. They are a talented team.
I said my cousin played. He didn't play yesterday, but he's at Southeast, and I was talking to his dad, and his dad was trying to be an apologist, saying, hey, you know, the alleys should be deeper than this. We shouldn't have hit that many home runs.
Well, the wind was blowing out.
And I'm like, well, the one that went over the right field when I just got here was a bomb that the wind just carried. It had been out anywhere with the wind that was going yesterday.
Listen, by the way, the wind was blowing out. The alleys are the same distance, and Beloit didn't hit any homers.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think he was just trying to be nice about it.
I think he's being really polite. Yeah, they absolutely crushed Beloit yesterday in both games, and Beloit will be fine. They'll bounce back, but it just was not a good day. And by the way, it wasn't like Beloit walked tons of guys or had tons of errors. They've had some issues with that at times, but Southeast just flat out pitched well, played good defense, and crushed the ball when they were
absolutely.
We were over the zone, and I mean crushed it. They were pretty much no doubt.
I mean, they were getting good contact on a lot of stuff.
They're good hitters.
Yeah,
good hitters, no doubt about it. So yeah, but Chloe Odell, what a performance yesterday. And what she's done in her career is pretty impressive and pretty exciting for her yesterday. And an exciting softball game, as you mentioned, 1-0 scoring the bottom of the seventh. Also exciting is Nick Lynn.
Yes, Nick Lynn is headed to the Kansas Volleyball Association Hall of Fame, and obviously something that's very deserved. And he's been there for 34 years, the head coach of the Smith Center volleyball team with an outstanding record. Just put it in his perspective, his teams have made state half the time he's been there. 17 out of 34 years that they've made it to state.
That's not bad.
9 out of the last 10, 6 straight that they made it to state. They made the state championship match 3 years in a row, won it. Obviously in 2021, runner-up in 2020 and 2022. So obviously the pedigree and the record are there. 1,004 and 343 in those 34 seasons as a head coach, 83-7 over the last 2 years. So if you ever doubted the pedigree, it's all right there. I said on Facebook somebody probably needs to write a book about it someday.
Yeah.
But those are the highlights for Nick Lynn and the reason that he's headed into the Kansas Volleyball Association Hall of Fame. So we did have a chance to catch up with Coach Lynn for the first time since January, actually. We got a chance to talk to him, and we'll hear from Coach Lynn about his honor and making it to the KVA Hall of Fame. And welcome to the Sports Ticket, and back on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Nick Lynn with us, the coach of the Smith Center Lady Red volleyball and basketball teams. Coach, it's nice to chat with you again. I know that you had the health scare there during the basketball season, and you're recovering from that, so that's great news. And you got some more great news on Thursday saying you're being inducted into the KVA Hall of Fame. So let's chat about that first, and then I do kind of want to give an update and let people know how you're doing. But what does it mean to you to receive this recognition, to be in the KVA Hall of Fame while you're still active as a coach?
Yeah, I was really excited to get that letter yesterday. And it's like anything, you know, you strive to, you know, get to that point, you know. And I think a lot of my case, it's probably longevity and being there for, you know, next year would be my last year. I'm going to say that, you know, for sure. But it'd be my 38th year. And I've been lucky. You know, I've had not only good, you know, coaches, you know, over time, but I've also had really good parents, you know, a lot of good support here in Smith Center, and to me, that's a lot of it, you know, and I've always been just really happy being in this community and coaching these kids, because they're, you know, they're just, if you get kids that want to work, you know, that's half the really success that you have in the program, and that's what we have here.
You talk about those kids that have put in the work, and I know that they did a lot for you over the last couple of years. You won your first state championship two seasons ago. This past season, you finished as a runner-up, and you did that the same the year before that. This team's been to 17 state tournaments, so you've had a lot of success. And what does that all boil down to, maybe deeper, for what you've been able to accomplish?
Well, I'm really happy, first of all, because it's not easy, we always go back to the summer months, when it comes to maybe some of the success we have later in the year, because the dedication we put on our own summer league volleyball program here in Smith Center, and we have maybe 10 schools that come play, and it just shows a lot of interest and a buy-in, it seems like. And we go to a tournament in Abilene in midsummer tournament, and that's kind of where we, show schools that are not from around here how we can perform. And then as the season goes on, we're lucky here, too, from the standpoint that we have a really tough schedule. I think our tournaments are all tough, and any of that kind of stuff kind of gets us by into a sub-state play and hopefully into a state tournament.
I like I said at the start, you did miss about half the basketball season here. I know that probably pained you to miss all of that, but how are you feeling right now? What's the progress, and how tough was it to see the girls finish out the season there without you being on the sideline for a lot of it?
Yeah, I mean, it was unexpected, and way back in early January, and I think I made 7 or 8 games only, it's just a situation where I probably should have better eating habits and that kind of thing. I blame the players for all the stress they give me.
Sure.
that's all part of it, right? But it's been a slow process, getting better. I intentionally really didn't even pay attention or listen to probably the first 5 or 6 games, when I was gone. And I didn't want any stress to go any higher, in my situation. And mm-hmm. But Denise, Kattenberg did a really good job of filling in as my assistant and doing a good job. And Heather Sass came in with the JV and really we didn't lose a beat, and went down there. I know she was really disappointed in that sub-state finals of Hoxie, but that happens, and it's, I don't think it'd be any different if I would have been there or anybody else been there. It's just a tough game. But trying to get through all this, health-wise, it's getting better, and just happy to be back in school.
Nick Lynn, the coach of the Smith Center Lady Red volleyball and basketball teams. Coach, congratulations again on being inducted into the KVA Hall of Fame. You're very deserving of it. We enjoy chatting with you and glad to have you back, and hopefully we'll get prepared for another great season in 2023, right?
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Dusty.
Big news there from Coach Lynn would be that he said next year's probably his last year, right?
So, yeah.
There we go. Sorry about that.
The big news in that interview, if you're listening, would be that Coach Lynn said, hey, next year probably going to be his last year.
And which, no,
I think
surprise,
kind of knew that.
People around it.
I was talking to him off the air. I was like, I'm probably going to stop next year. He's like, it's tough to make the decision. I was like, but you could have parents from every single class tell you that you need to stick around until their kids are done, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then when do you stop? He's like, he's like, I know, I got 7th grade parents telling me right now.
No,
he's
like,
I'm not doing that, that's for sure. So, but yeah, it was great to talk to Nick again and get an update on how he's doing health-wise. Looks like he's going in the right direction, and he's back into teaching now and everything like that. So we're excited for him to be inducted into the KVA Hall of Fame. One of the easiest people to work for and one of the best people and most deserving people of any of those honors that he gets, for sure.
Think of how fortunate Smith Center has been. Nick Lynn had Roger Barta for all those years with the football team, mm-hmm. and the program. Of course, there's a book written about them. You were talking about, write a book about,
yeah.
Nick Lynn, but about their great run. And it was like a bestseller there for a while. And Nick Lynn, I mean, can you imagine the stories he can share, all the times and the years that he has coached, and not just one sport, but multiple sports. And he's a state championship coach. And there's not, how many coaches are out there that can say, I, as a head coach, won state championships as a head coach of more than one sport?
Mm-hmm.
There can't be too many people that can say that.
It's not a long list, that's
no,
for sure.
No. So he definitely deserves to be in the Kansas Volleyball Association Hall of Fame, and he will be in the class of 2023. We thank him for joining us, and we're also happy that he's doing better health-wise, no doubt.
Absolutely.
And he still has hair. That's the greatest thing about it. Nick Lynn still has hair.
Yeah, we got to.
He has more hair than
I
do.
Tell us the trick, right?
Yeah, like, he has more hair than you and me.
Do it.
He has more hair than you and me, and we don't even. Well, I coach, but not.
We don't have the stress that he has from that aspect of it. I don't think.
No, that's amazing. I don't know if he had implants. I don't know what he's doing, but Coach Lynn, and, you know, and he's umped a baseball, youth baseball games before, Pee Wee baseball before. I mean, he volunteers, does a lot of stuff too, and
well, he finally gave up track a few years back.
Yeah,
like he was doing that too,
and yeah.
I'm like, hey, you need a season off, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, Nick Lynn is one of a kind, and I mean that in a very nice way. So very, very happy for him. He definitely deserves to be in that Hall of Fame, and that's very cool. The Royals are back in action as they hit the road to start a three-game series with the L.A. Angels. The Royals are 4-15 on the season. They lost six in a row, and the Angels are 9-10. The Royals are going to go with Taylor Clark as an opener. And then they will hand it off to Ryan Yarbrough out of the pen. The Angels are going to go with Shohei Ohtani, who is the best player and pitcher in Major League Baseball. He's 2-0 with an ERA of under 1, and he struck out 27 batters already this season. Taylor Clark and Shohei Ohtani, that should be one heck of a pitcher's duel tonight. First pitch for tonight's game is 8:38 in Anaheim. And now watch, the Royals will probably win this game somehow. It'll defy logic. It'll defy everything. Because on paper, they're going to get blown out.
Yeah.
Royals aren't hitting very well as it is, let alone having to face a really, really good pitcher. But here's the great news. There is a pitcher that's available that really could help the Royals. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Is it Johnny Cueto?
No.
I have no idea.
No, you didn't see this?
I don't believe I did.
Joe Buck's favorite player of all time is available.
Oh, Madison.
Yeah, the Arizona Diamondbacks. Arizona Diamondbacks designated veteran left-hander Madison Bumgarner, Royal Killer, from 2014, for assignment on Thursday, yesterday, following his poor start to the season. The D-backs are going to eat about $34 million. That's the great thing about baseball for players, guaranteed contracts. You got it. You stink, yeah. You still get your money.
It's not dead cap money for the team either.
Right. So Bumgarner, who is 33, he's available. He's available to... he was an $85 million investment the D-backs made in him. 69 starts with Arizona. His ERA was over 5. Don't know how much left in the tank for Bumgarner, but the Royals need, obviously, arms because they don't have much in the minor leagues, and wouldn't that be wild if Bumgarner was pitching for the Royals? It's not going to happen, of course, but still, I mean... Well, who knows? I mean, they've had Matt Harvey. Anything is possible.
I was going to say, it's not impossible.
Right.
I wouldn't expect it to happen, but...
What kind of reception
it does seem like
get?
The type of deal, right, that the Royals would do, though? Like, go get somebody that's washed up, you know,
and
on the back and hope... Like, Aroldis Chapman will be an example. He's not washed up, but just getting somebody that you know... has had a lot of success. Matt Harvey would be probably the top of that list recently, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Juan Gonzalez is part of that list in the past. And
Yeah, but a player you saw in the World Series, and then you bring in Lucas Duda and Matt Harvey and then Madison Bumgarner, that would be something. The Oakland A's announced yesterday that the club has reached an agreement to build a stadium, a $1 billion stadium on about 45 acres of land near the Las Vegas Strip. As a result, the team stated that they're hoping to be playing games in a new ballpark by 2027. However, a move to Las Vegas could come sooner than that. A's president David Cavall told the New York Times that the A's could play their home games at Las Vegas Ballpark, which is currently the home of the Las Vegas Aviators. The Aviators are currently the AAA affiliate of the A's. Now, you may be saying, well, that's not going to be a big enough park to have a Major League Baseball team, a minor league facility. Well, during the first month of the season, the A's rank last in baseball attendance with just 11,580 fans, and the seating capacity of that AAA stadium is about 12,000. So it would be maybe just perfect, a match made in heaven.
Make it work for a while, for sure.
Yeah. If the move to Las Vegas becomes official, it'll mark the fourth time in franchise history the A's have moved. Did you know that?
Yeah, it makes sense, yeah.
They started in Philadelphia in 1955.
Yeah.
Then they went to Kansas City, Missouri, played at Old Municipal Stadium. In the 60s, then they moved to Oakland prior to the 68 season. Then the Royals started their expansion team in 69. So, yeah, the A's continue to move around. We'll see if they end up working things out in Vegas, but it looks like that's what's going to happen. We shift to basketball. Caleb Grill, former Iowa State Cyclone, is going to be a Missouri Tiger. Averaged 10 points, 5 rebounds, so he is going to be a Missouri Tiger. So we should point that out. Because I thought some people might be interested in that.
Absolutely.
NBA playoffs last night. It was interesting. The Sixers and the Nets.
James foul and a shot by Harden, and they're going to take a look at this. A shot to the midsection of Royce O'Neal. The official Nick Booker calling for the signal for a replay here.
Running on the floor, flagrant foul, penalty two. Harden is ejected.
Okay, so trying to figure out these flagrant foul things. Officiating isn't easy, I get it. But they have the benefit of replay for the flagrant fouls. So the Sixers win last night. They come from behind to beat the Nets. They're up 3-0 in that best of seven. The series is over. 102-97 in Brooklyn. Tyrese Maxey, who's a star in the making, 25 points, 5 three-pointers. James Harden was having a really good game and got kicked out after what you just heard there. Joel Embiid has more flagrant fouls in his playoff career than Draymond Green, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And Draymond's played in the playoffs longer than Joel Embiid, according to what I saw the other day. Mm-hmm. Joel Embiid yesterday had a kick to the nether regions of a player while he was laying down on the ground, and they went and reviewed it, called that a flagrant one, and that looked much worse than what James Harden did. And James Harden, he pushed off, and whether he was trying to hit the guy in his nether regions or in that midsection area, he was diagnosed with a flagrant two and ejected. Joel Embiid actually took his leg, kicked up with pretty full force right between the legs of a player who was standing above him, and Joel Embiid got a flagrant one and was not ejected. James Harden got a flagrant two. He was ejected. Can you help me with this one?
I can't.
We hear a past history thing with Draymond Green. Joel Embiid has more of a history than James Harden does.
And I can't help with the force of the kick and things like that.
Yeah.
The one thing I can say, because we were talking about this last night actually in our group, and it's like the one thing I can say is like the difference between what Draymond did and what happened with Joel Embiid was that Claxton had more of an insightful thing going on. Like, he was literally taunting Joel Embiid, standing over the top of him and going over. He could have just stepped aside, but he stepped over and looked on top of Joel Embiid, so it was retaliation, right? The retaliation was definitely worse by Embiid than it was by Draymond Green, though. So that's where I'm like sitting here, which one's worse, as somebody was asking me, and I'm like, well, the actual act is worse from Embiid than it was from Draymond Green.
Agreed.
I mean, you're kicking a guy right in
pretty full force.
Right where you don't want to be
kicked.
Well,
Draymond's been kicked out of games before. Remember, he had, like, they showed four instances where when he was going up for a shot, he'd kick his leg out. He nailed Steven Adams
in that.
And he didn't get ejected for games like that until he had done that three or four times. It became kind of a deal, a trend. And so this is not unprecedented.
No.
And with the way Embiid did, that looked like intent, of course.
No, there's no doubt.
Is it because he's an MVP candidate? But James Harden's a really good player, but he's not the star he once was. I mean, I just think it's almost like, you know what? We can't kick out Embiid early in the game, because it was early in the game when this happened. Whereas Harden, we can kick out, but we're getting, when did Harden get kicked out? Third quarter?
I think, yeah.
I mean, and then the Sixers came back one anyway. But and I'm not a big Harden fan. I'm not a big Draymond Green fan. But if you can, you need to at least try to be objective, especially in our role here as a sports talk show host, co-host. And listen, Draymond Green, what he did the other night, and Joel Embiid, what he did last night, you can't tell me they're not. Listen, if Draymond Green is a flagrant too, and he's ejected, I'm not even talking suspension here.
Yeah.
Let's stop. People need to just really slow down, and because I know immediately people are going, well, what about suspension? No. Don't. All we're talking about the actual act. Draymond Green got a flagrant two and got ejected for a step on a player who was down on his back on the floor, who had just grabbed his foot and was holding on to him. Okay? And like we said, two wrongs don't make a right. Joel Embiid last night, what he did, I mean, first of all, there looks like tremendous intent, just like Draymond Green meant to stomp on Sabonis. So the intent's there by both. And yes, there's another guy kind of helped get it going in regards to it takes two to tango. And Joel Embiid, I thought what he did, his act on the floor, his act, I thought was worse or looked worse with more force than Draymond Green.
Yeah.
And Green gets ejected with a flagrant two, and Embiid gets a flagrant one. And then you go to Harden's. Harden's, I don't think, was as bad, honestly, as Green's or Embiid. And he gets ejected. Barkley was going off, and he was just like going off last night, and I'm with him. And he's just like, they didn't even get it right on either one.
Yeah, the thing that's wild to me is like the Harden deal, he's just making a move to create separation, right to get a shot off.
Yeah.
And it's within the flow of what he's doing as a basketball move, right?
Right.
Like,
if you swing your elbow and hit a guy in the face, you're not ejected.
Yeah,
you're trying to clear for a rebound, but it's a flagrant one usually.
Yeah.
Because
it's
a head injury.
Depending on how much force may get a flagrant two, but it's not normal.
Right. Why isn't Harden a flagrant one?
Yeah. I'm just like, it's just kind of like, That's one of the things on the judgment
it's
part
a
of
judgment
that.
Call,
it doesn't make a lot of sense to me because...
Is it because they don't like James Harden as much as like Joel Embiid and it's a personal thing?
Yeah, I don't know. Because a lot of the stuff that you'll see, like sometimes you will see that. Like you're just talking about, like you'll get a flagrant one maybe if you swing that elbow and hit somebody, right. But you're not going to get kicked out for it. And because they say, hey, that's all part of the play. It's a basketball move. Sometimes they don't even call anything on those plays.
And what Embiid did... Harden was a basketball move. Embiid was
absolutely
not.
Absolutely not. Not even close,
neither
right?
Was Draymond.
Yeah, and so it's just like part of me is like, how are you kicking people out just for making moves?
I know.
Like that everybody does in every single game, but it just happened to land in the wrong spot.
Yeah,
like
if
he hits him in the shoulder on that move, it's not a flagrant. It's probably not even a flagrant one.
Oh, no.
And so, but he kind of slips where his hand's at and hits him where you don't want to be hit as a man, and then now he's kicked out of the game because of that. And it's just like, well, that wasn't intent. He didn't do that on purpose.
Yeah.
But Joel Embiid was intent. He did it on purpose. But there they are sending the message that two wrongs make a right.
They are.
Because Claxton's standing over him taunting him that Joel has the right to kick him in the crotch. Or, you know, it's like,
it's not,
well, no, I don't think that's how this works,
it's not an ejectionable offense, but yet Draymond is. Yeah, and by the way, like I said, if you want to compare the two from this standpoint, is Embiid does have a history too.
Yeah,
I mean, I mean, honestly, you go back and watch this play. If Draymond Green is suspended like he was, and I'm not defending Draymond Green, everybody knows close to me how I feel about Draymond Green. Okay, I think he acted like a clown the other night after what happened, and I don't condone what Sabonis did. That was a dirty play too. Okay, but Green is responsible for his own actions, and then he hammed it up after that, and that didn't help him, his cause. His history didn't help his cause. He got suspended. And you can argue whether he should have been suspended for the next game or not, but he got suspended for all of that. How is Joel Embiid not suspended for game four? Based on what I saw, I don't know how Joel Embiid is not suspended game four. And the reason he won't be probably is, well, it wasn't a flagrant two, but it should have been.
Well, and he didn't do the extra stuff afterwards either, right?
Right, but his act was worse.
Yeah.
I think most people would agree with
him,
except Sixer fans.
Exactly. And the extension, they've talked about the extension of what Draymond Green did after it happened is part of what led to that suspension. So,
and his history, Embiid has a history.
And the history would be there for Embiid, but he didn't go nuts after it happened or whatever and you know, taunt the crowd or whatever Draymond did, you know. I don't understand. Like, what do we talk about all the time that we want? We want consistency, and that's not consistent at all.
Right. let's see. I'm trying to see. Yeah, I was trying to see what, because I saw it on social media that last night that Joel Embiid has a lot of technicals in the playoffs and he has flagrant fouls in the playoffs. It's not like this is his first offense either.
No.
And I like Joel Embiid's game too. I do.
Oh, I mean,
I respect it. But
he's
been
known to be a guy like that. I mean, he'll
antagonize.
And, and
so does Draymond.
Yeah. They're very similar, to be completely honest.
In various ways, they are.
But I mean, Joel's a bigger name and does a lot more for his team. There's no question right now about that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how it happens there. Speaking of Draymond Green, he did not play last night. Suspended game three. Gary Payton II, a very good defender, didn't play. He was sick. But the Warriors, I would have bet all my money they would have won last night, and they did. 114-97 without those guys. Because the Kings, here's why I thought the Warriors would win. One, their season's on the line. They're going to rally the troops, and you usually can rally when your top guy's down for a game. You see a star quarterback, the backup, they rally around for a game or two. Interim coach, you rally around. You circle the wagons, as they say. Not surprised there. They have a championship pedigree. They're at home. The Kings don't have the home crowd that goes nuts behind them. Then there's all the controversy with Sabonis and Green, and Sabonis is a dirty player. And then on top of that, Sacramento is very young in various spots, and so they don't have that closeout mentality. So I think that, you know, I said the other day, even though the Kings won the first two games and they looked like the better team, the more athletic team, and the Warriors look like they're in trouble, it's one thing to win the first two games at home. It's different if this series is tied 2-2 going back to Sacramento for Game 5, which I think this series will be tied 2-2 going back to Sacramento. And as I said yesterday, the series doesn't begin until a road team actually wins a game. Now, sometimes the home team wins every one of the games, although that's pretty rare nowadays in any sport. But I'm sitting here, I'm like, listen, last year everybody thought the Warriors were done down 2-1 to the Celtics, and what'd they do?
They won.
They won the next three. Yeah. So you just can't underestimate the heart of a champion. The Warriors, this might be their last dance. I think it kind of is. I think they're going to have to break up the band a little bit going into next year. But then again, if you win it all again this year, the Warriors, why would you break up the band? Maybe finances would be part of it. I don't think the Warriors are going to win it all, but Klay Thompson says there's nobody in this league that can beat us in a seven-game series if we're healthy. Or suspended, I guess. He should have added that. And last night, Steph Curry was fantastic, as your star should be in must-win situations. 6 threes, 36 points. Andrew Wiggins had 20 points, but Kevon Looney had 20 rebounds and a career-high 9 assists. So what did you need to do? What do you need to do in team sports when a key guy goes down? You need other people to step up, right? So Steph Curry, he did what he was supposed to do. Everybody expected that. Wiggins has been scoring 20 a game. No surprise there. You needed a guy like Kevon Looney to step up and have 20 rebounds and 9 assists. That is not a normal line for Kevon Looney.
Clean up what Draymond does.
That's right.
Right now, he scores a little bit, but yep. he rebounds, and he's good at distributing the basketball. Yep. And so if you can clean up what you lose from a guy that's not really a major scorer for you,
right.
Kevon Looney had 4 points, right?
Right.
and so... Yeah, you do that. You fill in when somebody's gone. Somebody's got to pick up that slack no matter what sport it is.
So the Warriors down 2-1 in that series, and as I said, I predict that it's going to be 2-2 going back to Sacramento, and then the series really begins. In L.A. last night, the Suns reclaimed home court advantage. They won 129-124 over the Clippers. Your good buddy Kawhi Leonard did not play last night. Out of the blue yesterday, the news broke he had a knee sprain. Now, I don't know how severe it is. Kawhi Leonard is not going to push it any further than he doesn't seem like a guy now anymore, if he ever was, that's going to play through anything for the sake of the team. It's just not going to happen.
No.
And I mean, the Clippers were playing well. No Paul George. They won game one. Kawhi's been terrific. He looks like the Kawhi with the Raptors when they won the NBA championship against the Warriors. His defense has been great. He's been scoring 30, 38. He's been all-around great player like he once was. And all of a sudden, game three, going back home, and there is no Paul George. Remember this. No Paul George. He's out for the series. And Kawhi has a knee sprain, and he's out. Now, I'm not saying that he isn't truly hurt, and the knee sprain, maybe he couldn't go. It's possible. But with the track record of Kawhi and all the things he and his people have shoved or told him to do or whatever the case may be, I'm sitting here, if I'm a Clipper fan, I'm pissed off because I've got a guy that don't play back-to-back nights. He plays 5 or 6 games and then automatically gets the 7th off. We've gone through and documented that this year. He's a guy that you are protecting, but you spend a ton of money on. He is the prototypical load management player. And I know he had a torn ACL, but he took longer to come back from that torn ACL than the other players, quite a few other players. And now you got him back. He looks like he once was, and then he has a knee sprain. And you sit here and go, is that really enough to keep him out of a game three of the playoffs? And maybe it is. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm not saying that he's a wimp. What I'm saying is I think there's reasons to question it. Doesn't mean we're right in our questioning of it. He might be seriously have an issue, and he may not play the rest of the series. But Kawhi Leonard has developed a reputation, and he earned it. And I'm not even a Clipper fan. And I'm sitting here like, Tyler Hero has a broken hand. I understand why he doesn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Ja Morant, basically, I mean, he had his whole hand and wrist bent backward on his shooting hand. I could see why he doesn't play. I understand knees are important. I know knee injuries you got to watch. He has a torn ACL from in the past. That's reconstructed. He's had surgery. And he looked great the other day, the last two games of the series. And then out of the blue, which they must have did a good job of keeping a secret, but I don't think it is a keeping a secret. I think that Kawhi let them know late. You know what? My knees bother me suddenly. And maybe it did a day later. 24 hours later, he had some swelling. But I don't know, man. When I saw that, I just like, oh, shocking. Kawhi's not going to play. I mean, it don't even matter. It used to be that players fought through things when it was playoff time. Like, you don't fight. Okay, it's one thing. Players used to play every day. It was like a badge of honor. I'm playing every game in the regular season. Now players don't do that. But then it was kind of like, well, you're saving yourself for the playoffs. So, well, normally he would play if it was a playoff game. But since it's a regular season game in January, he's sitting. I heard that with the Mavericks with Luka this year. Well, if it were a must-win playoff situation, Luka would play. But it's regular season, coming on a back-to-back, he's got some soreness in his ankle, he's going to sit this one out. Well, now you get players where it doesn't even seem like they fight their way through some of these things. And once again, I don't know how badly they're hurt. It might be completely legitimate. But Kawhi has, you talk about the reputation that Draymond Green has earned. You talk about reputation that Joel Embiid has earned. You can talk about various players that have earned certain reputations. Dennis Rodman earned it. Of course, you can earn a reputation in a great way, like a Michael Jordan, LeBron James, and others. And a Kobe Bryant with his work ethic. What's the reputation of Kawhi Leonard?
I got a seat at the table for anybody that's upset about Kawhi not playing. It's the reputation was built a long time ago.
That's what
and
I'm saying.
That's this guy is like the biggest conundrum I've ever had as a fan in my life, because he led the team that I cheer for literally to a championship. He was the MVP in 2014 of the NBA Finals and led them to their best season ever. And I watched him in person drop 43 on the Grizzlies, and they just couldn't stop him. Like, this dude was unreal when he was playing at his peak level. And he showed that when he got traded to the Raptors after he didn't play that, but 9 games the season before with the Spurs, right? But ever since that closeout by Zaza in the Western Conference Finals, it's been nothing but, is this guy hurt? Does he want to play? What's the situation with Kawhi? That's been the question mark ever since then. And it's just like, I don't understand. I don't understand it. Like,
there's always this big cloud of secrecy.
Yeah. And just tell me what's going on, for crying out. That was the most aggravating part
of
it. That year that he played nine. Like, he came back middle of the year, played not even middle of the year, but like January.
Yeah.
Played 9 games and then just shut it down again. And it's like, are you hurt? Like, why are you not? Why are you not playing? Like, And there was no answers. He was not communicating with the Spurs, yet they were still paying him.
Which I don't think he's communicated that well about this.
Yeah, and I don't know what he's communicating last year and this year with the Clippers, whatever's going on with everything that's going down with him. Like, that's the thing that drives me nuts with that whole situation, is I've never gotten actual clarity of who was telling him not to play, why he wasn't playing, because he didn't communicate with anybody.
No.
And still doesn't, it doesn't sound like.
Well, and here's CBS Sports reporting. Kawhi Leonard, of course, did not play Game 3 last night due to a knee sprain. Leonard initially suffered the injury in Game 1. Played in Game 2.
Yeah.
Now he's expected to be day-to-day ahead of Game 4. Clippers president Lawrence Frank told reporters that Leonard is extremely disappointed. Okay. That he won't be able to suit up for Game 3. But he wouldn't go in any further detail about the severity of his injury, because there's always a cloud of secrecy around Kawhi Leonard. It remains unclear exactly when Leonard aggravated his knee, as he never went to the locker room and played over 80 combined minutes in games 1 and 2, but there was a day in between, by the way. They weren't back-to-backs. Clippers beat writer Law Murray suggested a play from the third quarter of game 1, which was similar to the sequence where he tore his ACL in the 21 playoffs, but again, that's just a guess because nobody wants to tell anybody anything. He sat out the entire 21-22 season to rehab his knee. Had been load managing it all season long. He missed 20 of the Clippers' first 27 games this year, and there's only one time this season he played in more than 5 consecutive games. Once, all year long. And the plan seemed to be working in perfection. He finished out pretty well in the regular season at the end of the year, last month or so. Looked great in the playoffs in games 1 and 2 in the Suns. And then all of a sudden it's a knee sprain. Now who knows? Maybe he tore his ACL again, and we have to take back everything that we said. But once again, it was a surprise late scratch, which tells me that I don't know if Kawhi is actually fully communicating with the Clippers, just like he didn't communicate with the Spurs. And for a team to spend all this money on a guy, I think you need transparency from the guy so that you can plan for the next game, especially when you're in the playoffs. And once again, I don't know all the details. Maybe we're speculating too much. But as soon as I heard this yesterday, I just go, I smell something fishy. That's just what I thought.
Absolutely. I mean, it's hard not to with the history there.
Yeah,
and I don't know. I get more frustrated with everything you were reading there. Like, it's just like,
just add to it, right?
You didn't miss 20 out of 27 games when you already missed an entire season because of an ACL. It's like, I can't with him, dude.
Yeah. How much time do you need to come back from a torn ACL compared to all these other guys? Adrian Peterson came back and played football as a running back in, what was it, 8 months? I know everybody's body's different. I get it. Anyway, the Suns win, so the Clippers now down 2-1. Norman Powell did his part, 42 for the Clippers, but Devin Booker had 45. Suns are up 2-1. Booker tied Charles Barkley's franchise record for most 40-point playoff games with 5. Three more Game 3s tonight on the schedule. It's the Celtics up 2-0 on the Hawks. Game 3 at 6 o'clock, ESPN in Atlanta. 7:30 tonight, ABC. The Cavs-Knicks tied 1-1 in New York. Tip-off at 7:30. Nuggets are up 2-0 in the West over the Timberwolves. Game 3 in Minnesota tonight. Tip-off at 8:30 on ESPN. You know, one way to cope with the whole Kawhi Leonard situation, Joel Embiid, Draymond Green, or the Royals just stink, is to have some Moose Drool beer. I was taking the trash out this morning, and I saw the 12 bottles of beer on the wall. They're against the
against
wall.
Against the wall, yeah.
That are covered in cobwebs, and you can tell that we do not clean around here. But I took the trash out today. And I've been here now almost 17 years. You've been here longer than I have. Yeah. Do you know when that Moose Drool was put there? Because was it there when you started
here? It was not
here?
When I started.
It wasn't.
Because
okay.
they actually drank it.
And, well, I know Herb did.
Yeah, and so I can't recall when he put it there.
Why would but I don't? I'm
I don't know
out,
why he put it there.
Why would that's, you put yeah. it? It's not a 12 pack. It's yeah. a 12 pack individual bottle, yeah. so it's spread out front the wall. None of them are open. I would hate to know what it tastes like if you popped one open.
Oh man!
But I told our listeners, if you want to try one, let me know and come on by, because then I just get rid of it. I'm tempted to just pop the lids and pour it out and then recycle the glass because I'm a big recycler. But I'm like, that's been a fixture at this radio station for maybe 20 years.
That's turned into a decoration, you know.
I took a picture of it and put it on Facebook saying, look what I found when I'm cleaning the radio station. I should just, maybe I should just try to sell them individually and don't tell anybody they've been here for 20 years.
Yeah, what you ought to do is clean them up and see if they're worth anything.
Right.
With that full bottles that haven't been opened of Moose Drool.
Maybe it's worth something.
Yeah.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so, considering I can get a 12-pack for $9.49 online. But,
yeah.
Or maybe, I don't even know if they sell Moose Drool beer locally around here, do they?
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
It's something that he picked up.
Yeah,
probably down when they went to the Lake of the Ozarks or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or up in the Wisconsin area, maybe. Actually, Montana is where it's based out of.
Yeah.
Big Sky Brewing Company. Moose Drool Brown Ale. Moose Drool Beer. It's a brown. I'm not a big brown ale guy.
Like dark ales are kind of tough to drink anyway.
Oh,
imagine
yeah.
opening up one 20 years later and be like, no, you don't think so.
Sludge starts coming out. Oh my gosh, I don't know, man. I've seen that multiple times over the years. I'm like, you know, maybe I should like clean off those bottles, make them look new, and try to pawn them off on somebody, or should I pour them out? And then keep one of the bottles, you know, maybe it's a collector's thing, which I doubt it when you can get it for $10 somewhere else online or whatever. But that's been sitting around for so long, and it's exactly 12 beers. I'd love to know why Herb decided, here's a great place to put the beer. It's not in. I took it out of the 12-pack. I'm just going to stack them on the floor. I got to bend over and grab them. I have no idea why he put them there, but they're still there.
Well, he was a lot closer to the ground than we are.
Well, he was.
There's no question about that. But what's crazy is like there's no fridge over there until you came.
Until
right?
I put
like,
a fridge
so there. Was
a,
right. Apparently, it was like the warm beer stays in this area.
I'm not a big fan of the darker ales, so I don't think I like Moose Drill beer. I think I've tried it once. I don't think I loved it that much, but I definitely don't think I like it 20 years later. I'm just going to go crazy. You don't know until you try it. Oh, I think I do.
Pass on that.
Good, big hard pass on that. All right, the two-time Super Bowl champion, Patrick Mahomes, signed a monster 10-year, $503 million contract extension with the Chiefs back in 2020. While that long-term commitment links Mahomes to the organization for the bulk of his career and is the largest contract in American professional sports history, he is now the sixth highest-paid quarterback on an annual standpoint. His annual salary is sixth highest in the league. And he'll probably fall further down that list when Joe Burrow and the Bengals agree on a long-term deal and Justin Herbert at the Chargers. During his pre-draft press conference, general manager Brett Veach of the Chiefs made note of Mahomes' contract and acknowledged that an adjustment could be coming once a few more deals go down. He said, and I quote, "We have a special relationship with Mahomes and his agent. We're in constant communication. It's one of those things, and I think Coach Andy Reid hinted on this in his last press conference, where as soon as one guy gets his contract done, it's kind of the blueprint and the model. And a few years later, it's jumped and exceeded." But I think that this organization and the relationship we have with Pat will always be working to make sure that we're doing right by everybody. There will be a couple more contracts that still have to get done, Burrow and Herbert, and once they do, I think you kind of look at everything, assess where you are and what you can do, and take it from there, end of quote. This just backs up everything that we already have talked about on the show numerous times. Patrick Mahomes, I am very, very confident. He was assured when he signed his deal in 2020, listen, your deal's the richest in sports history right now. You're the highest paid quarterback per year, but you won't be in a couple years. And if things keep going the way they are, down the line, we will take care of you. And why wouldn't you? Yeah. He's the best. He's the face of the league. He's been the AFC title game 5 straight years. Never played a road game in the playoffs because they're always so good and get the 1 or 2 seed. They've been in 3 Super Bowls. They won 2 Super Bowls. He's 2-time Super Bowl MVP, 2-time regular season MVP. I mean, no quarterback in NFL history has had the first 5 years that Patrick Mahomes has, and there's nobody that's even close. He'd be a Hall of Famer today if he retired. That's how good Patrick Mahomes has been. So, of course, you're going to take care of the guy. You're
yes.
going to take care of the guy. And here's the thing Mahomes realizes is, listen, I don't have to be the highest paid quarterback all the time and hold out all the time, because I know in order to win championships, here's how smart Patrick Mahomes is. And it makes total sense. Some players don't get it. Some athletes don't get it. Some celebrities don't get it. But Patrick Mahomes understands. The money that Jalen Hurts is going to get 51 per year now, okay? Mahomes is 45 if you average it out. Mm-hmm. So let's just use that as numbers. And they change year to year because if things get restructured, guaranteed money, signing bonus, deferred money, it gets complicated in regards to adjusting for the cap. And they've rearranged his contract already 2 or 3 times since 2020. But Mahomes makes $6 million less than Jalen Hurts on an annual basis with Hurts' newest contract, okay, on average.
Yeah.
Okay, now Mahomes' overall contract is twice as big as Jalen Hurts money-wise. Although, Hurts has $179 million guaranteed up to $255. Mahomes, I forgot how much is guaranteed of his, but his $503 million is not guaranteed. Not all of it. So, Mahomes, technically, if you want to use easy math here, he is making $6 million less this upcoming year, on average, than Jalen Hurts. But Mahomes is smart enough to know that by me not being paid the number one amount and being flexible with my contract allows me and the team to go get a Juju Smith-Schuster on a one-year deal, MBS on a one-year deal. It allows us maybe to extend Chris Jones. It allows us to go get a Justin Reed. It gives us at least a little bit of flexibility to get some players to make sure that we're always winning. And when you're always winning and then you're hoisting the Lombardi Trophy 2 out of 5 years, Mahomes makes more money because he's so successful. He gets more endorsement deals. He gets more advertisement deals. He's also reinvested some of that money into sports ownership already. I mean, Mahomes gets way more than the $6 million that is less than Jalen Hurts per year because the Chiefs win. Mahomes could easily hold the Chiefs to the fire and say, right now, I'm holding out, and I want $60 million per year, and I want $250 million guaranteed right now. He could do that, and he would not be off base for asking for it. He could be Mr. Selfish and say right now, this is ludicrous. I'm clearly better than all these guys. I just beat the guy that's got the highest paid contract. The other guy is 38 and is going to be traded, and they don't even want him anymore, the Green Bay Packers. I've won 2 Super Bowls in 5 years, 2-time Super Bowl MVP, never had to play a road playoff game. I played through injuries. I made my teammates better. Hell, I won last year without Tyreek Hill. And I got better. I do off-season programs. Patrick Mahomes has every reason in the world to be super selfish and tell the Chiefs right now, I'm done until you guys give me a new deal. And you can sit here and say, well, wait a minute. He has a deal. He needs to live up to that deal. This happens all the time in sports. Once the market changes, how many times do you see a guy sign a deal and 2 years later holds out because now he's the 10th highest paid player at his position and says, I'm better than these guys, which you usually are, and I want to rip up the old contract and I want you to update it and take care of me because I have performed above and beyond what my contract is. And you have a right to do that. Doesn't mean the team has to honor it and rip up the contract. The team can be steadfast and say, listen, you signed the deal, you're going to live up to the deal, or you can hold out and not get paid. That's your decision. But you're not going to do that, Patrick Mahomes. If Patrick Mahomes came to the Chiefs and said, listen, I want $250 million guaranteed right now. I want a brand new deal. I want $60 million per year average. He could do all of that. And Chiefs fans, even a lot of Chiefs fans, would be like, do it, Kelce. But the Chiefs would not be winning Super Bowls anymore.
No.
And Mahomes knows that. So why not take a little bit less? And some people got all caught up in he didn't take less like Tom Brady did. No, he took less in his last deal. I know it sounds crazy, but he could have easily gotten more. He also allowed for his contract to be flexible from year to year. And he did walk away from some money at the table in regards to some guaranteed money. He could have maybe got more. The next deal that Mahomes gets is going to be astronomical. It's going to be the biggest in sports history. It's going to probably blow away the one he already has. And at that point, the Chiefs are going to have to figure out, okay, what number is too much? And Mahomes and the Chiefs, I'm sure, are going to sit down and say, okay, Patrick, you're right. You should get more than $45 million per year. You're right. You should be the highest paid quarterback in the league. And I think the Chiefs will come to him and say, I think they're going to be the ones that come to him. Say, Patrick, you've done what you said you were going to do. You've been terrific. We've worked with each other. We got a great relationship. And now we're in position. We've been thinking about restructuring your deal probably the day after you signed your last one. And we want to take care of this so you don't have to stress out about it. We want you to feel comfortable with everything. We are now in a spot financially, knowing the cap money situation. We know that we can give you now a new restructured deal that will make you once again the highest paid player in the NFL on a per year average. But the Chiefs also got to weigh the long-term effects of a deal that gets that big, just like they had to weigh this when they presented. The Chiefs were smart. They were ahead of the curve. They didn't have to negotiate a new deal with Mahomes back in 2020. They could have waited. They didn't. They were very smart in what they did. Now you got Lamar Jackson Ravens situation, and they got a mess on their hands, and maybe if they'd taken care of that a couple years ago, they'd be in better shape. So Mahomes gets it. And don't worry, I don't think anybody's worrying about Mahomes financially, but if you're worried about Mahomes being the sixth highest paid quarterback per year average, you're going to have to drop down to number 9 or 10. The Chiefs and Brett Veach just came out and made it very clear that anybody that follows the Chiefs should know they're not going to sit here and get in this contract hostage negotiation, and Mahomes is going to hold out. Mahomes is, he'd lose credibility with his team if he did that. He's the leader of the team. It would send a horrible message. Mahomes knows that. Mahomes has plenty of money. A lot of people say, well, you have plenty of money. Why do you need more? He knows he has plenty of money. And he also knows he's going to be taken care of. And that's an organization you want to play for. And that's why the Chiefs are successful. Yes, Mahomes is unbelievable. And he's taken the Chiefs to another level. The Chiefs were winning a lot of games before Mahomes became the quarterback. They were 1-11 or 12 and winning the division with Alex Smith. They were not a horrible team when Mahomes took over. But he took them to the next level. But the Kansas City Chiefs have an organization. This is why they're so good. And it happened with the Patriots in their dynasty. The Chiefs, I still say, aren't quite a dynasty. Some people say they are. The Chiefs work because of the relationship and the open dialogue that Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Brett Veach have with one another. That's why this team continues to be successful. It's not just Patrick Mahomes. It's not just Andy Reid. It's not just Brett Veach. It's just not the players. It's the entire organization. And the Chiefs, I'll give you an example to back this up. When the Chiefs were talking about trading Tyreek Hill, there are organizations that would have, maybe the Packers, that would have just traded Tyreek Hill and not even talked to Aaron Rodgers or not talked to Patrick Mahomes and just been like, you know what? This is our team. You play for us. You're under contract. And we think it's best to trade Tyreek Hill. So we'll tell you as soon as we trade him that we're trading him, but we're not going to talk to you about the possibilities of what happens if we trade him. The Kansas City Chiefs talked to not only Patrick Mahomes, but Travis Kelce before they traded Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs talked to their two star players on offense. And that's why I think Kelce's taken less money at times from the Chiefs. Kelce could easily argue he gets more.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, but he wants to win, and he's got enough money, apparently. So Kelce and Mahomes were approached by the Chiefs. They talked about it. It's well documented that they said, listen, we have a plan. We want to run this plan by you. Okay? This is what we want to do. We don't think we should pay Tyreek Hill this much money. He wants to be traded if he doesn't get it. We are going to trade Tyreek Hill, or we are planning on trading Tyreek Hill. We think with the draft picks we get and the cap flexibility, we have a plan, Patrick and Travis, to get other guys to help you. We're not going to just trade Tyreek away and then just add to the defense. We've targeted a few wide receivers we like. We will make sure that you have guys like, you know, it ended up being Juju Smith-Schuster, MBS, even a Justin Watson. We're going to find guys and we've got a plan. And Travis Kelce even talked about an article I read that the Chiefs, he was like, right away, Mahomes and Travis Kelce were like, I don't know. Well, of course you would be that way.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And then the Chiefs explain, Reed and Veach, here, we just don't do this as a knee-jerk reaction. We had a plan to re-sign Tyreek Hill, and we had a plan to trade Tyreek Hill. And you always have to be ahead of the curve and looking forward. Forward thinkers usually benefit. Then you need to be I've always stressed this, put it on my tombstone. You're better to be proactive than reactive. Reactive people are usually behind the curve. Proactive people are usually ahead of the curve. And one of the reasons why the Chiefs are so good right now is they're ahead of the curve. And they have been ahead of the curve ever since that draft day when John Dorsey was the GM, but Brett Veach was the one to convince the Chiefs to look at Patrick Mahomes seriously. And then Reed fell in love with him. The Chiefs have been ahead of the NFL. They've been ahead of the curve since they fleeced the entire National Football League and all the pundits that were dead wrong. The Chiefs knew more than Mel Kiper and all these other people. The Chiefs jumped 17 spots to number 10 to take Patrick Mahomes. And ever since then, that was a gigantic proactive move, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, and they were coming off an 11-12 win season, and they made the playoffs, made the divisional round, and won their division. They didn't have to go get Patrick Mahomes. They could have stayed at 27 and picked a guy of need. They knew this was the guy they wanted. They went out and they made it happen. They were ahead of the curve. Okay? They were ahead of the curve last year. They traded up to get Trent McDuffie right ahead of the Bills, who was one of their biggest competitors to win the AFC last year. They wanted a corner. They like McDuffie, and the Chiefs didn't show their cards. All of a sudden, out of the blue, they moved up, and they drafted Trent McDuffie. And people didn't predict that. By the way, all these mock drafts where everybody's telling everybody what the Chiefs are going to draft is a waste of time. You can use it. You can look at it. These people have no clue. They're throwing darts on the wall just like Dusty and I am. Okay? They don't know any more than we do in regards to who the Chiefs are going to pick. They might have a group of people that they think the Chiefs are picking from pool-wise, but they have no idea who's going to be picked in the first 30 picks prior to the Chiefs picking. They have no idea what team the Chiefs will trade up with to get somebody. They have no idea what position the Chiefs are going to draft. They have no idea if the Chiefs are going to trade down and out of the first round. Well, the Chiefs aren't going to trade out of the first round because they're hosting the draft. Listen, if the Chiefs don't have somebody there at 31 that they like, they'll trade out. They will trade out unless Clark Hunt has just demanded that they don't, which is getting in the way of success. The Chiefs are ahead of the curve. They were ahead of the curve when they did Mahomes' deal in 2020. They didn't wait. You know how many teams wait too long and then they're in trouble? And it costs them even more. The Chiefs didn't wait. The Chiefs have been ahead of the curve. And they're ahead of the curve right now. They're ahead of the curve already knowing that they're going to take care of Patrick Mahomes. They've already had dialogue with Mahomes during this entire time, ever since they signed him to the deal in 2020. We will take care of you. And Mahomes, in working with the Chiefs, it says, and I will work with you to make sure that we still have enough flexibility to be perennial champions. That is a match made in heaven. So, Chiefs fans, I hope you really soak it in and enjoy the quarterback that you or we have. I hope you enjoy the coach you or we have. I hope you enjoy the general manager you or we have. I hope you enjoy the owner you have. I hope you enjoy and appreciate the organization. Because 5 years from now, this organization could be in the toilet. Mahomes gets hurt, or he retires early, decides to step away. He's got $2 billion, and he's full-time owner of four professional franchises. Who knows? I mean, there's guys that stepped away. Barry Sanders stepped away early. Calvin Johnson stepped away early. Robert Smith stepped away early. Guys step away early. And I don't think those guys love football. Mahomes does seem to love football. So I don't think he'd step away that soon. But what if he has some big-time injury? So there's no guarantee next year, 5 years from now, the Chiefs are going to be amazing. But if Mahomes stays healthy and the Chiefs and the organization continue to have an unbelievable working relationship as they do now, there's no reason to think anything's going to change. The Chiefs are going to be right near the top every year in the AFC West, winning the division or right there. They're always going to be in contention for a playoff spot. They're always going to be in contention to make a run in the playoffs as long as 15 is healthy and they have the structure they have right now, Reed, Veach, and Mahomes. Travis Kelce will not be on this team 5 years from now, more than likely. Brett Veach will probably be the GM. Clark Hunt will be the owner. Patrick Mahomes will be the quarterback, God willing, health-wise. Andy Reid, very
Matt Nagy will be the coach.
He might be. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if Andy Reid.
How far that goes.
I wouldn't be surprised if Andy Reid's still there.
No, I wouldn't.
If he's winning Super Bowls and he's having so much success, why would he want to walk away unless his health is bad? Which that could go south, I guess. But you see the consistency that the Chiefs have. They have an unbelievable relationship. And look across the league at what you the ones that don't. Okay, Josh Allen and the Bills seem to have a good relationship. And he got his new deal. Lamar Jackson and the Ravens don't have a good relationship. Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers have a horrific relationship, and they trade away his best players. They don't draft weapons for his offense. They don't pick up guys to help him. And now they're jettisoned in New York. So there's been the Packers show exactly what you shouldn't do. And the Chiefs show you exactly what to do. And that's no coincidence that the Chiefs had it's no coincidence the Chiefs have more Super Bowl championships and rings with Mahomes in 5 years and Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre combined. They only have two, one each. Mahomes already has more Super Bowl appearances than Aaron Rodgers does. He has three times as many Super Bowl appearances as Aaron Rodgers has already. Now, that's not all on Aaron Rodgers. That tells you that's an indictment of the Packer organization. Whereas the Chiefs are like, oh, no, you know, we're not going to trade Tyreek Hill, but we're going to bring you other weapons. The Packers, well, we got rid of Davante Adams, and let's go ahead and let's draft a defensive player in the first round. Or let's trade up and get Jordan Love. What? So yeah. The Chiefs are just ahead of the curve, and I think a big reason why they're ahead of the curve is they have an unbelievable working relationship they've got between Veach, Reed and Mahomes. It's an amazing relationship. And you can throw Kelsey in there too. It is that those are the faces of the franchise. And so now it leads me to my second part of the conversation. Do you agree or disagree?
No, I agree with it. I was reading a story about the Commanders sale the other day, and just reading how just inefficient that operation is.
Yes.
And it kind of makes me think of that side of it, like of a way it could go wrong. And Washington's at the top of that list. They just don't even know what's going on in their facilities, right? And you're hearing more from the president about maybe some football moves than you are from the GM.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach is never on the same page. They're trying to fix that with Rivera. And I'm just reading the story about all the things that need to be fixed when the new owner comes into Washington. And these are things that are not at all a problem in Kansas City.
Right.
Because Mark Donovan stays away from Brett Veach. He does what he needs to do as president to make this team kind of who they are to the public, right?
Yep.
To the perception of what the Chiefs mean to the business side of football. And Brett Veach takes care of the football side of football.
Yes.
And Andy Reid works in conjunction and has for a long, long time with Brett Veach about what makes our football team better and what we can do to be good. And then that goes down to your guy that's leading your team to championships on the field, and that's Patrick Mahomes, right? You're talking about, like, it's not a lot of teams are going to go to the quarterback and say, hey, we're going to trade Tyreek. What do you think about it? There are some GMs that don't even go to their coach and say, we're going to trade Tyreek Hill. What do you think about it?
Yeah.
Now, that would never be the case with Andy Reid.
No, never.
But there are some teams that will trade pieces and dudes without the coach even having a say in it or even talking to the GM about it, because that's the GM's job. And,
right.
And some of those GMs are sitting here like, this is my job. It's not his job. I'm supposed to put this team together. I don't care what he thinks about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put it all together, and he'll do what he needs to do with the team that I give to him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just not the case with the Chiefs, and it hasn't been ever since really Andy Reid became a part of this, because Andy Reid was hired as a coach before they even hired a GM.
Right.
So it's like, go get the dude that you want to be the coach and make sure that when you have Andy Reid in place, that he's going to be able to work with the GM and they're going to agree or not agree, but be able to work together in constructing a team that's going to win championships.
Right.
And if you can't work together, it's never going to work. Carl Peterson was not like Brett Veach. I'm going to tell you that right now. Carl Peterson would have been probably one of those guys that traded Tyreek Hill without even talking to his coach.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the things that are a little bit different. Now, John Dorsey, I think, would have talked to his coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the cohesiveness of everybody that's involved there and making sure that everybody's on the same page is next level and probably top of the charts for any professional sports team I've ever seen.
When we talk about teams on the floor, right, or on the field, I'll let you go get Marvin. But when we talk about teams on the field or on the floor, basketball, football, baseball, we talk about Draymond Green the other day. What makes Draymond Green such a great player is he knows his role. Championship teams, everybody knows their role. You know, the Royals, Terrence Gore was a pinch runner. He knew his role. You know, Gerard Dyson knew his role. Everybody knew their role. Seventh inning reliever, eighth inning reliever, ninth inning reliever. Everybody knew their role. The Golden State Warriors, everybody knows their role. Kevon Looney knows I'm not supposed to score a lot. There's no plays designed for me. I got to go get rebounds, which he got 20 last night, and 9 assists, so that Steph Curry can score 36 and Wiggins can score 20. The great teams, the championship teams, know their roles, all right? And the Chiefs are no different. But you also have to know your role off the field in regards to your organization and its structure. You've got to know your role. And Brett Veach knows his role. Andy Reid knows his role. Patrick Mahomes knows his role. Now, they can all communicate about what each of them do to work together to fulfill their roles in order to form a super well-run organization to win Super Bowls, okay? But you have to have people on the floor, in the field, but also in the front office to know their roles. If you want to win a championship, you could have a team that has everybody knows their roles, but you're not going to have long-term success in an organization if the GM, the president, the owner, and the coach don't know their roles, if they keep stepping on each other. And we've seen Marty Schottenheimer, he would butted heads with his general manager and owner for quite some time, and they still went 14-2, and he got fired after that season because they didn't agree on their roles. Whether that was Marty's fault, the GM's fault, the owner's fault, I don't know. And listen, Clark Hunt, listen, he was born into richness, okay? Clark Hunt wasn't, you know, growing up poor. But Clark Hunt, one thing I will say about him, he does a very good job of, is he stays out of the way. He's not, you wonder why the Cowboys struggle? Like the Cowboys, their owner is a problem. Their owner gets in the way of their success. He makes himself the star of the organization, which that's an ego thing. And Jerry Jones says things that you agree with, and he's very outspoken and blunt sometimes, and he says sometimes too much. You don't hear Clark Hunt saying that stuff. Most owners don't say that stuff. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Cowboys are, well, they're talented every year, but somehow they just don't accomplish what they're supposed to. Because I think their owner sometimes is a distraction. I think the players are like, well, we didn't play well. What's Jerry going to say on his show? Jerry Jones has his own show. All right, Jerry Jones is bigger than the team. And honestly, he has a right to do that. He's their owner. He bought the team. He can do that. But I don't feel sorry for him because the Cowboys haven't won a championship for a long time or hardly win a playoff game because I think he gets in the way because he steps on.
Your owner can't be your GM.
No, he's a GM. He's the owner. He steps on other people. He says things and that rubs people the wrong way, even within his own organization. That does not happen with the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, the New England Patriots. You might not like Bill Belichick, but Bill Belichick's always known his role. And Bob Kraft has let Bill Belichick do what he needs to do, and Brady did his thing, and they worked collectively on it. And honestly, when it finally went south and Brady left, is that relationship started to deteriorate, according to reports. Well, that may someday happen with the Chiefs. I don't think it'll ever happen with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, but maybe Matt Nagy ends up being the head coach, and it just ruins everything. And Veach is great, and Mahomes is great, but Matt Nagy screws everything up. Or maybe Brett Veach goes into a different role, goes to another team, and the new GM messes everything up. Or maybe Mahomes becomes all egotistical, and he's the one who eventually screws it up. There's no guarantee that this is going to keep happening for 15 years or 5 years or 2 years. But right now, they're a cohesive orchestra. The conductor knows what he's doing, the trombone player, the percussion, the trumpet players, the clarinets, the flutes, everybody's in harmony with the Chiefs. And that's a big, gigantic reason why the Chiefs have won 2 Super Bowls in 5 years and 3 Super Bowl appearances and win the AFC West every year and don't have to play a road game in the playoffs and host the AFC title game 5 years in a row. It isn't just because of Mahomes' play. It isn't just because of Travis Kelce and Mahomes. It's not just because of Andy Reid. It's not just because of Brett Veach. It's not because of just Clark Hunt. It's the collective roles that all these guys fill, and they fill them wonderfully. They complement each other perfectly, and that's usually what you see with championship organizations, and that's what the Chiefs are. And now they will host the NFL Draft next Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Kansas City. There are all kind of rumors out there about who the Chiefs are going to pick. Yesterday, I heard one that just made me laugh, and I immediately said, there is no way that's happening. Oh, there's a rumor I saw that the Chiefs are going to trade up to get Bijan Robinson. The Chiefs are not going to draft a running back. They don't need to. I mean, let me take that back. They will probably draft the running back, but it sure as hell ain't going to be in the first
it's
round.
It's not a move-up first-round situation.
He's probably a top-10 pick anyway. The Chiefs don't need to move all the way to top-10 to get a running back. The Chiefs don't need to move up at all if they don't want to. But they have the firepower to move up. So there's people like, the Chiefs are going to draft three wide receivers. They don't. There's not room for three wide receivers with the guys they've signed. I mean, these people that put together these mock drafts and even get paid to do it, I know they're trying to do it for 30-some teams, but you should think you'd focus on the team that's a Super Bowl champion. The Chiefs are not going to draft three or four wide receivers. If they do, I'll eat crow. They're not. The Chiefs are going to get three tackles. No, they're not going to draft three tackles. Oh, they're going to trade. They're going to get now. Everybody, the hot thing now is Zay Flowers, wide receiver, Boston College. He worked out with Mahomes, so now the Chiefs are going to trade up and get Zay Flowers. Do you really truly believe that the Chiefs, if they want, do you think the Chiefs would just be that transparent to tell the whole league that we want Zay Flowers? And so, no, I think that the Chiefs did was a complete smokescreen. I think the Chiefs are zigging when everybody else is zagging, and I think the Chiefs will, this is my belief, unless there is a great receiver available that they love, and I don't even think it matters what position. I think if there is a player that they fall in love with, I think the Chiefs will do something to move all the way up into, I think, as far as the top 15. They'd have to give up a lot to get in the top 10. I think they could easily move all the way up to 15, 18, 20 in that range. They could easily move up to 25 and get their guy. Mm-hmm. Okay? But I don't think the Chiefs are going to you don't trade just to trade. There's got to be a guy you're in love with that you believe another team's going to take before you pick, and then you try to pull the trigger and orchestrate a trade. The Chiefs did that with Patrick Mahomes. They move up 17 picks. The Chiefs did that with McDuffie. They moved up, what was it, 7 or 8 picks last year or whatever it was. They got ahead of the Bills both times, ahead of the Saints that they knew wanted Mahomes possibly when they drafted Mahomes. They jumped ahead of the Bills because they knew that the Bills wanted McDuffie or were interested in McDuffie. The Chiefs seem to be ahead of the curve. Do you really think that they're going to be that transparent? Because you didn't know that they were going to trade and go for Mahomes when they did. Nobody reported that. Do you think the Chiefs, nobody reported the Chiefs are going to trade and get McDuffie last year. Do you really truly believe, I mean, how naive are people? Do they just not use their brains? Like, do you really truly believe that the Chiefs brought in Zay Flowers and now it's just going to be like, yep, we're trading up to get Zay Flowers? You don't think teams would be like, well, you told us you want him really bad. Now we're going to really stick it to you. You're going to have to pay extra to get Zay Flowers. No, I think it's a smokescreen. I think if Zay Flowers is there at 31, yeah, they'll take him. If that's the guy they like, they'll take him. And maybe he falls out down to 20, and they might jump up and take Zay Flowers. I'm not saying they won't. But what I'm saying is all of a sudden people are readjusting mock drafts. They're going to trade up and get Zay Flowers. Oh, my gosh. NFL teams do this all the time. They send out smoke signals. They send out stuff to fool other teams. They make it sound like they're just in love with this guy. Let me tell you something. The Carolina Panthers know exactly who they're going to take with the first pick already. But when they're asked, well, are you still considering Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, and Anthony Richardson? Yeah, we are still considering all these guys. They're liars. They already know. And I think it's Bryce Young. But they already know who they're going to take. They knew when they traded for the number one pick, I think they knew who they were going to take. Mm-hmm. Okay? And maybe something changed their mind and they went with C.J. Stroud. Who knows? But the bottom line is the Carolina Panthers are not telling you. They know who they're going to pick. There's nobody ahead of them. They traded to get the top pick. Nobody can jump ahead of them to draft ahead of them. They're the number one team picking. They know who they want. So you're going to believe what they're telling you? Just like, why would you believe the Chiefs putting out video out there and all this video with Zay Flowers and Quentin Johnston and these receivers working with Mahomes? The Chiefs can't draft all the guys that work with Patrick Mahomes, okay? That's just impossible. So I don't know for sure what position they're going to go with, but I'm going to tell you right now, sure as hell ain't going to be running back in the first round. That's insane. Like, why don't? What's next? We're drafting C.J. Stroud because in case Mahomes gets hurt, we're going to draft. We're going to move up to three and get C.J. Stroud. Come on, stop it. The Chiefs are not going to draft Bijan Robinson. Now, the only way that would happen, in my opinion, is Bijan Robinson drops all the way to 31.
Mm-hmm.
That would maybe be, and the Chiefs are like, well, he's clearly the best available talent. Let's take it. The Chiefs are not going to trade up to get. They love Pacheco. They like McKinnon's still out there. They could re-sign if they want. I do think they'll draft a young running back, probably in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round. I think they're going to draft a tight end somewhere. I would not be surprised at all. Everybody's talking about offensive tackle because Juwan Taylor, who they picked up from Jacksonville as a free agent, it was out yesterday that he's willing to play left or right. So that gives the Chiefs flexibility, and I think that's another reason why the Chiefs let Orlando Brown walk as well. They found a guy that's willing to play either, whereas Orlando Brown says, I'm a left tackle. Now, the Chiefs paid $20 million a year for a guy that probably will play left tackle, but is willing to play right tackle. That gives the Chiefs flexibility to choose a guy that if there's a guy they like at 31 that plays primarily right tackle or left tackle, they can do either. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They have more flexibility, once again, zigging while everybody zags. And they may take an offensive tackle at 31. They may trade up and get offensive tackle. But the positions that everybody is putting in the mock drafts, here are the positions everybody's putting the Chiefs at. Offensive tackle, wide receiver, edge rusher. That's everybody's mock draft has the Chiefs taking a pass rusher, an offensive tackle, or a wide receiver. And I'm going to say it right now, and I could be dead wrong. Do not be surprised. Do not be shocked if there's a top flight corner or a top flight tight end. That's the one I'm looking at. There's some good tight ends in this draft. Do not be stunned if the Chiefs trade up in one of these rounds next week to get the Kelce successor. And the guy I look at is Dalton Kincaid from Utah. I think he's the perfect tight end for what the Chiefs want to do. There's the Mayor kid from Notre Dame. He could be a first-round pick. If he's sitting there at 31, the Chiefs might take him. But everybody's stuck in this. It's got to be an O-tackle. It's got to be an edge rusher. It's got to be a wide receiver. And you know what? It very well could be one of those three. Odds are, you're probably right, it's one of those three. But at 31, if the best player sitting there is a corner to pair with Trent McDuffie, I know you got Jalen Watson. I know you like your rookies from last year. But L'Jarius Sneed is going to want his bag of money coming up here pretty soon. You don't think we talk about this every year. The Chiefs usually draft a guy that is going to replace the guy they're about to let go a year from now. We've talked about it multiple times. They can't re-sign Nick Bolton and give him all his money. Chris Jones, a long-term extension. You're going to give Mahomes a ton of money. And you're going to give Sneed a bunch of money. The Chiefs already have a plan, I guarantee you, going, here's our priorities as to who we want to sign long-term. And I think Nick Bolton's a higher priority than L'Jarius Sneed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So don't be stunned if at 31 the Chiefs find a corner that they really like and they draft a corner. Nobody's talking about corners because they drafted so many last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they easily could take a corner. The Chiefs are in such a great position. They do not have to draft out of need. This is what the mock draft people do. Well, they don't know who they got at right tackle, and Taylor was signed to play left tackle, and Andrew Wiley's gone, so they need a right tackle. They got Lucas Niang. They got Derek Kennard if they drafted. They've got options at right tackle. They could find a free agent veteran guy. They've got options where they don't have to address in the draft. Now, they could, but they don't have to. Well, they need a wide receiver because they lost Mecole Hardman and Juju Smith-Schuster. Well, they brought in Richie James from the Giants. They've re-signed Justin Watson. Sky Moore, they expect to have a bigger role. They have Kadarius Toney for a whole season. Remember, they traded middle of the season last year. Yeah, they might. They will probably draft a receiver or two, maybe. But it doesn't mean it has to be in the first round.
MVS is still on the team. Like you,
I left out MVS.
Yeah, you go to the you don't have to. Receiver's not at the top of this list. I mean, they proved it last year that it doesn't have to be at the top of this list.
I think when you get Richie James and you re-sign Justin Watson, what you're telling me is you're not drafting a wide receiver in the first round unless he falls in your lap.
Somebody falls into you, yeah.
So I personally think the Chiefs are going to stay at 31 and draft a position that nobody's talking about. Or I think the Chiefs, and I still believe this, I think the Chiefs will trade up in the first round. But I think they'll trade up to get a edge rusher or somebody they like to help their defense. I don't think they're going to trade up to get a tackle. I don't think they're going to trade up to get a wide receiver. I don't think they're going to trade up to get a running back. I think they're going to trade up to get an edge rusher to improve that defense.
The interesting thing, though, too, is it's a fairly deep edge class, it looks like.
It is.
What I'm seeing on some of the mock drafts that I've looked at.
Right.
And so...
could be a deep class, but if there's a couple guys that you think are clearly at the top tier...
Yeah, exactly. If there's somebody that stands out to you, then yeah, you'll move up and go get them. I think there's a potential for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're going to trade up for an offensive lineman.
I don't either.
I just don't see that happening.
They have more depth on the line than people realize, you know? And so...
Well, the plan right now, it seems like Lucas Niang, right? Like, if he's healthy, that's where they're going to... That's the direction that it sounds like they're trying to go in. So,
right.
You know, that's a good start. And, I mean, there's no law that says he can not take a tackle in the fourth round and he's going to be a stud for you, right? Like, you just got to... You got to play it out and that's why you have your board and figure out who you want.
Listen, here's what in regards to positions, they have 10 draft picks, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't think they'll end up using all 10. I think they're going to trade. I think you're going to see them move up in a couple different rounds next week. But what I will say is this. I think the Chiefs, and I think in a position they're going to draft, let's just say that they have 5 draft picks, all right? They have more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But what positions do you think they're definitely going to draft?
Edge for sure. I mean, it's happening at some point.
Agreed.
And they'll take a lineman at some point, like a tackle or something, I think.
A D tackle, yeah. I gotcha.
Oh, and I think they'll take an offensive lineman at some point.
Agreed. I think they'll take a tight end at some point.
Yeah. And, I wouldn't be surprised if they go ahead and take a wide receiver at some point.
And I think they'll take a running back later rounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think they'll take a receiver.
I even still got those are probably. You know, the top three that if you would ask me would be edge, offensive tackle, and probably defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Because, I mean, everybody has their ideas when you go in, and fans always have ideas of what they think that a team needs if they don't pay attention to it
right.
And actually dig deep into it. So all the fans are talking wide receiver.
Well, a lot of people are all about D-Hop. Yeah. Well, we're still going to get D-Hop. Now people are thinking there's more of a chance they're going to get DeAndre Hopkins. Okay, well, if you do that, you sure as heck ain't drafting a wide receiver first round. If that happens, that changes everybody's mock draft, and you wasted your time again.
Exactly.
All it takes is one trade to blow up your mock draft.
That's what's wild is all the time that gets spent on it.
There's people doing 7-round mock drafts.
Yeah.
That's insane waste of time.
Like the trade happens on the fourth pick and everything's done after that. Like somebody valued a guy that you thought was going to get picked 10th and they traded up to pick him at 4.
Right.
Well, then everybody else goes down a notch and then another trade happens at 7 and then it's just completely blown up with 2 trades and nobody, like, it's not even close to what you think it was going to look like.
Go back and look at the mock draft when the Chiefs traded up 17 picks to get Patrick Mahomes, and everybody thought when they did, it was Deshaun Watson. They wouldn't even got that part right at the last second. Had they known well in advance and had inside information and knew the Chiefs were going up for 27-10 that year to get ahead of the Saints and the Bills and whatever else, they traded with the Bills and they got ahead of the Saints, everybody would have said, this is easy. They're getting Watson. They wouldn't even had that right. So, and by the way, that changes your mock draft tremendously when the 27th in the order goes to 10. So I think we're going to see a lot of movement in the draft. It's going to be fun, and Kansas City gets to host it. They're talking 300,000 people will come into Kansas City because of this draft, which to watch a card being read.
I thought about going maybe like Saturday or something, and I'm like, no.
There's too many people. I watch it on TV, and I just sit here and go, the NFL is by far the best sport in the country. Because you got a whole bunch of people wearing jerseys, screaming and yelling, all worried about what, in some cases, teenager is going to be drafted by your team, or 20, 21, 22-year-old young man, and then you're there to watch a guy read a card. And you only have one pick per round, typically. And then you wait, and then your team trades out of that round. And then you wait another hour or two. I mean, I guess I don't see... I mean, yeah, sure, it'd be an experience, I'm sure. But I'm okay watching on TV. And honestly, it's boring to me on TV because I listen to all these pundits think that they have all the answers, and half the time they're wrong anyway.
Yeah.
So that just fills time in between picks. I'd rather them do features on different players to fill the time instead of having Kiper and McShay talk all the time. But that's okay. They do give some good insight, don't get me wrong. But I don't think I want to be amongst 200,000 people, 100,000 people at Union Station to be there and then go pay for overpaid whatever at concession stands to kill my time and stand most of the time waiting. And then all of a sudden, The Kansas City Chiefs have traded their first-round pick to the... And by the way, Thursday's only a first round. So if you wait till then and the Chiefs trade out, you were there all day long and didn't even get to watch the Chiefs, and maybe you're only going to be there for the first day.
Yeah.
Now everything's screwed up for you.
That's what's bad about like being the team that they're the city that's hosting the draft, and your team just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like no matter what, unless they might trade up, but like you're going into it thinking, hey, I'm out here waiting until the last pick of the day.
Yes.
To see who my team's going to pick. And then And that I think that's a big reason why it's highly, highly unlikely that the Chiefs will trade down.
I think that's why it's more likely they trade up to make a little bit of a deal.
And it's like it's hard for me to believe that that they're going to be like, let all our fans sit around here for 30 picks and then be like, nah, we're not taking this one. Come back tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take our first draft pick.
I'll tell you a guy I like. And I saw him in person when KU played TCU in football this year, and he absolutely killed the Jayhawks. And that's Quentin Johnston from TCU.
Mm-hmm.
He is his athletic ability, his size. He should be the number one receiver on the board, but he's been inconsistent. You get him to work with a guy like Patrick Mahomes, and by the way, he worked out with Mahomes too. By the way, down in Texas, you get a guy like that, a taller target who's got speed. He really can go high point, pinpoint the ball. You give Mahomes a guy like that that's willing to learn, and that's what the Chiefs do with some of these guys. They get guys, and you're like, well, they weren't great in college, but they're pretty decent. Now, the Chiefs have a good coaching staff. They're going to build them up, and then they become more consistent, and the Chiefs get a really good steal. I mean, one of the biggest steals in the draft was getting a seventh-round running back out of Rutgers, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Why did every team passed on him at least six times or more, and they got the fastest running back in the draft in round seven? That's insane. So, I mean, they could easily get a great wide receiver in round four or five and be a stud. But Zay Flowers, a lot of people like him. They compare him to Antonio Brown. Jalen Hyatt is a kid from Tennessee they say would be, there's a guy to replace Mecole Hardman speed-wise and could really stretch the field. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's a guy that is under the radar a little bit. But I'll tell you, if I had to pick out of those three, Jordan Addison, I think USC is another one. You'd have to trade up to get him. But maybe Johnston of TCU is going to be sitting there at 25, 26, and Chiefs just go up a few spots, don't give up a ton of draft capital, and get that guy. And I'd be okay with that, too. I think a guy that had a up and down but showed all these flashes in college is the type of guy that flourishes with the Chiefs because you get in line. You know, you want to be good. You get in line here. We're a championship culture. You get in line. And Beach says it over and over. We don't draft guys just purely on athletic ability. It's whether we think they're going to fit in this culture. We want them to fit into the – and Mahomes has some input on some of this stuff, by the way. We want a guy that's going to fit character-wise, is not going to ruffle the feathers. He's going to fit in this clubhouse, this locker room, because we have one common goal, and that's to keep winning championships. And if there's a lot of people that make these mock drafts have no idea what the character is of these kids, whether they just want their bag and then they're done and they're not going to try very hard, you don't know. That's why they go through all these interview processes. That's why they bring some of these prospective draft picks to Arrowhead to talk to them. That's why I guarantee the Chiefs have some of these guys working out with Mahomes, which I think I'm surprised legally that's allowed. I'm surprised.
Yeah, it is
that.
Weird how all those.
I think that might change.
Rules and regulations work.
But if that ends up happening, Mahomes already has a little inside scoop on a few receivers in this class already that he can go to Brett Veach, and we talk about how they have a great relationship, and say, hey, man, you know, I know you guys have been talking about Zay Flowers, but this other kid, I think he'd be a great fit, and he might be there in round two or three. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, Mahomes is almost like an extra coach. Your great quarterbacks are. Peyton Manning was like a coach on the field. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, having one of those quarterbacks that's almost like a coach on the field, he's like the point guard of a basketball team, that's what the quarterback is of a football team. But for him to be thinking, I think Mahomes thinks like a general manager too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mahomes' ultimate goal is to get seven rings. I do. I think it is to get to Brady. And I think
Andy Reid said that. Like,
right.
He wants to be the best, whatever that means. But.
And so I think when Mahomes is sitting here, he's not looking at a guy he works out with going, wow, he's going to be awesome in the next year or two. I think Mahomes is going, is this a guy that I could play with for 5 years?
Yeah.
I think that's what he's thinking, and makes sense.
Yeah.
And again, once again, ahead of the curve. And we still got plenty of time to talk draft. It's not till next Thursday. Have a great weekend.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.